Have you ever wondered what it's like to witness a murder?
Forrest grabbed the knife and then just stabbed Johnny in one motion.
Or how it feels to be shot?
I was immediately hit by a barrage of bullets.
Or how you would react if your spouse hired someone to kill you?
And he was to put me in a grave with a bullet wound on my head.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a stalking victim.
Came back upstairs, and when I came back and turned the corner into my room, I saw him standing there.
You'll hear from a man who was kidnapped and tortured.
I would do anything, say anything, to simply get away.
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Take a deep breath.
Oh my God!
Real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app, or at whatwasthatlike.com.
This podcast contains adult themes and language, and some of the things that we discuss may be disturbing to some listeners. In this podcast, we discuss sexual assault, torture, race, and murder. Listener discretion is advised. Please take care of yourself.
Episode 185. Buiti binafi and bienvenidos, bitches. Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah.
Fruit Loops is a podcast about true crimes committed by people of color and those that are other than the victims. Because contrary to popular belief, not all serial killers are straight, cisgender, white dudes. These crimes, it's Black History Month, so I'm trying to do my Martin Luther King impression. These crimes rarely get any public attention now because the news is racist, allegedly. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Thank you.
And we are Wendy and Beth. She's Wendy, a Black Latinx woman, and I'm Beth, and I just happen to be white.
Hey, she is a good white person. She's an ally, one of the goods.
I'm all right.
Good ones, yes. We love her for it.
We're not journalists, investigators, or psychologists, just a couple of gals interested in true crime. Also, the opinions expressed in this podcast are just that, our opinions.
And with that said, who are we talking about today, Beth?
Well, this is part two of our story on Juan David Ortiz, a Border Patrol agent turned serial killer. So if you haven't listened to part one yet, go on back and listen to it, and we'll meet you right back here.
That's right. Estas son las mañanitas que cantaba Juan David, el asesinato Border Patrol, and it is part two with me. Now, before we get into it, how you doing?
I'm all right. Nothing really to report back. How about you?
Things are good. So it's Black History Month, and
right.
I'm just so grateful that we moved to Georgia. So my kids have Black teachers, and they're learning about Black history in a way that they never would have if we were
right.
in Arizona.
Right.
So one of my son's questions on his essay tonight was, do you think Black history should be limited to 1 month? And he's just listing all these facts. Slavery lasted for 250 years.
Wow.
He goes, I heard him because he dictates. He doesn't type. He goes, it should be the whole year. It's the least they can do. That's my boy.
A boy after your own heart. Yeah.
That's right. So proud of him. So yeah, no, things are good. Black History Month is just finding all the wonderful things to enjoy about Blackness and
awesome.
Life. And it's great. Tell your friends. So now we're going to get into some listener letters.
Well, hello, angels.
I just love that sweet, sweet sound. What is in that bag, Beth?
Well, we got an Instagram DM from Ronnie.
Okay. What did Ronnie have to say?
Well, Ronnie said that they're a teacher.
Okay.
And they wanted to let us know that they love what we're doing and how we do it, that we're a safe space and open in our dialogue. And because of how we speak to each other and to our listeners, they now feel more comfortable talking about and reaching out for help with their mental health.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
And the biggest takeaway, though, they said, is that they thought they were being an ally. It's not enough just to not be racist, but you have to be anti-racist.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought they were. But Wendy's Culture Corner and tips for how to talk to racist people have helped them so much.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm going to cry. Glory to your alert.
So they just said thank you, and they're learning so much, and that they love us.
Oh, Ronnie, well, we love you. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons why we, you know, started the show. It was an opportunity to, like, have conversations, and we're not perfect at it, but you know, it's a start, and we're so glad that it's helping everybody, including you, on your journey to be like a better citizen of the world. So hip-hop air horns to Ronnie.
Yeah, thank you, Ronnie.
Yeah. What else is in that bag?
Oh, we got a Twitter DM from Tracy.
Oh, what's up, Tracy?
About our recent episode on Celeste Simone Carrington.
Oh, yes.
And Tracy worked with Dr. Alan Marks for many years.
Wow.
Yeah.
The doc who was the surviving victim. Wow.
Yep. Who was shot. Whew. Yeah. And they said that evidently the doctor came to the nursery in his hospital gown and robe to see his newborn patients while he was a patient himself.
And
he has since retired, and he was a sweet, quiet, gentle doctor.
Aw. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, thank you, Tracy, for filling us in. I love Tracy. Tracy is really active with us on Twitter. And whenever we miss something, or we're like, sometimes you and I will have a dialogue and we're like, I don't know what that means. Don't fact check us. We move on. And Tracy's like, hello, I do know what that means. So Tracy is like a wealth of information. We really appreciate you, Tracy. So hip hop air horns to Tracy.
Yeah. Thank you, Tracy.
And oh my God, we got a new Patreon, and her name is Veronica B. And guess what?
Ooh.
It's Beth's friend.
Yeah, it's my friend.
I met Veronica once at a pate at Beth's house, and I love her too. Be my friend too, Veronica. We have a little tune for you. Thank you for supporting our show. Let me do the hip hop air horns now because I'm a forgetful biatch. Okay. Let's thank Veronica, baby. Let's thank for being a fruity. Let's thank Veronica B, being a patron. Let's thank Veronica. Let's thank Veronica, baby. And Veronica, thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Somebody told me a secret that you like 90s hip hop. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. And if you hate it, don't tell me. Also, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into the story when we come back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
All right, so let's talk about batteries, specifically social batteries.
Okay.
Now, during the winter, you know, like my battery was like really drained, and I really just couldn't wait for it to be over. And now that winter is gone, I am feeling more energized socially. So I can manage having friends over at my house and going out to do things. But I have to do a lot of mental preparing.
Yeah.
And then I also have to have time to recover from the people and the things.
Oh, yeah. I get that. And I know there are people out there who are energized and even thrive on being around people.
Yeah.
But I am definitely not one of those people.
No, ma'am. The thing is, you know, sometimes our batteries can get drained when we say yes to all the things and to all the people. And we forget to, you know, set boundaries and set aside time and space for ourselves.
Everyone's different.
Right.
And the good news is that therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah.
I definitely had many sessions with my therapist about boundaries and positive coping skills. And therapy is, dare I say, empowering?
Yeah.
And it can help you become the bestest version of yourself and can help you determine when your battery is beyond depleted or needs a refresher.
Yeah. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/fruit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's betterhelp.com/fruit.
True terrors of horror, bizarre happenings, unexplainable events. On our podcast, Disturbed, terror takes center stage. Each episode is a journey into the darkest corners of human existence, delving into bone-chilling tales of kidnappings, serial killers, maniacs, and the very essence of your worst nightmares coming to life on this weekly true horror show. Disturbed is not for the faint of heart. It's an exploration of real, unadulterated horror sourced from everyday people. Each episode is a descent into the macabre, where we narrate stories that will leave you on the edge of your seat and crawling in your skin. We navigate the disturbing narratives that lurk in the shadows, offering a raw and unfiltered listen into the most terrifying aspects of the human experience. Enter at your own risk and let the unsettling tales unfold in the haunting realm of Disturbed. And remember, listeners, stay safe out there.
All right. Woo. We are back. Remind us, Beth, who is our subject today?
Our subject today is Juan David Ortiz, a Border Patrol agent in Laredo, Texas, who went on a nearly two-week-long serial killing spree in September of 2018, murdering four women and attempting to murder a fifth. And this is part two.
Okay, so we're going to do a recap for those of y'all who tuned in last week and are like, what happened? I don't remember. So fill us in, Beth. Take us there.
Well, Juan David Ortiz was born in Brownsville, Texas, where he lived with his mother and three younger siblings. He had a pretty normal childhood, as far as we know, and didn't get into any trouble. In July of 2001, he enlisted in the Navy and became an emergency medical technician, trained to provide trauma care during combat.
Beginning at the age of 19, he served in Kuwait and Baghdad during the Second Gulf War with a platoon of Marines who called him Doc. When he was home on leave, he married a woman named Daniela, who he'd gone to high school with. In 2005, he was stationed in San Antone. In 2009, he left the Navy and joined the Border Patrol.
In 2015, he and his family, which now included two children, moved to Laredo. By 2017, Ortiz had been promoted to the position of intelligence supervisor, but all was not well. Ortiz made comments to a Marine buddy that he felt like he was back in Iraq, going to war every day. And the Marine buddy suspected that he was experiencing long repressed PTSD. He had also started drinking heavily.
In 2018, Ortiz began frequenting the blocks in Laredo, a four-block area on San Bernardo Avenue that is known as a hotspot for sex work. He'd ask for sex, but sometimes he just wanted to go for a drive and talk. He also told a friend that he had a girlfriend and showed him a picture of the woman on his phone.
On September 3rd, 2018, the body of Melissa Ramirez, 29, was found on the side of a dirt road in a remote part of the county, 24 miles north of Laredo. She'd been shot in the head. One of the people tasked with assisting in the investigation was none other than Juan David Ortiz.
Santa Maria. Hey, by the way, when we were baby podcasters when this case started, and people were messaging us like, have you heard about it? Have you heard about it? And we knew about it, was on our radar, but it hadn't concluded yet, right? There was, it hadn't been, we cover cases that are usually finalized. Somebody's been convicted.
Gone through trial.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm just taking my mind back to that time. Back 2018. It was a very good year. Actually,
pre-pandemic years.
Yes. Year, Remember? So
the when before Ortiz, times.
Yeah. So when Ortiz's friend saw Melissa's photo in the newspaper, he was struck by her resemblance to Ortiz's girlfriend. But he convinced himself that he was mistaken because he thought Ortiz was a good guy who would never visit the blocks, let alone murder a woman. So now we're going to hop on back into the timeline. Splish splash.
For 10 days after Melissa's murder, investigators made little progress. At one point, one of the investigators called in a request to the South Texas Border Intelligence Center, asking for help in finding a sex worker named Claudine Luera, 42, who occasionally worked San Bernardo Avenue and who had told others that she had an idea about who was behind the killings.
Uh-oh, closing in. So Claudine had grown up in a neighborhood near downtown Laredo, where she and her sisters were referred to as Las Blanquitas, meaning the whiteies, because they were biracial and had light skin. After school, Claudine had worked for a time as a clerk for the district attorney's office. Wow, that's an impressive gig.
Yeah. But according to her sister Angie, something happened to her as a child. Although Claudine never disclosed what it was, Angie knew it was something terrible. Claudine eventually began struggling with heroin addiction, and by 2015, she was working on the blocks.
I should also say that this time, 2015, 2018, the heroin and opioid epidemic numbers were at unprecedented levels. So she also could be a victim of that as well. After Melissa was murdered, Claudine took a cab to the apartment of her eldest child, who was in college studying to become a nurse. Claudine said she was scared and wanted to leave her life as a sex worker. But within a few days, Claudine was back on the blocks.
On the morning of September 13th, the day after the request for help in finding Claudine, a truck driver found Claudine Luera's body less than 2 miles from where Melissa's body had been found. She was dressed in a pink sweater and blue jeans and had been shot in the head at close range. Nearby were .40 caliber bullet casings.
That's so sad. And she was so, as my understanding was, really excited and proud of her child who was in college.
Right.
Amazingly, she had survived long enough to crawl out of the grass where she had been shot to a place on the verge of the road where she was visible. And when the driver stepped down from his cab, he saw that she was still alive. She was taken to the hospital but died later that day.
The cops initially tried to keep Claudine's murder quiet.
Ugh. What? Okay. Yeah. I if you are new here, Wendy hates the police. I'm a police abolitionist. They solve 2% of violent crimes. Their homicide solve rate is abysmal. They don't come until after something bad happens, and they're messy ass fucking hoes. Okay, sorry, I had to interrupt.
That's all.
I'm done.
So yeah, that's, I hate when they do this. Let's pretend like everything's fine.
Because they don't want to look bad is what it comes down to. Because if they look bad, then their budgets don't grow. And their budgets are ridiculous because the illusion is that they are useful and they are not. So.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. say any word that starts with C and I'll hop in on my cop rant. I dare you.
I'm going to stay away from that.
And another thing. I'm just kidding.
So the police told the local news media only that a woman had died at Laredo Hospital after suffering head trauma. But reporters connected the crimes and news spread fast.
Investigators searched for clues to any men who had recently picked up Claudine. They got a few more names, which they passed on to Ortiz at the South Texas Border Intelligence Center. He and his team waded through photographs. And Ortiz is like, this looks familiar. Like, can you just picture, like, what? It's just
right?
a mockery of the entire process. Anyway, he and his team waded through photographs from Border Patrol cameras positioned near the road where Claudine had been found. But Ortiz soon reported back that none of the vehicles were owned by men on the list of possible suspects. Oh my, what happened?
I wonder if while he's looking at the photographs, he's looking for like any
sign of himself.
Right, so he could pull it out.
Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. I 100% think that that is what happened.
Right. On the evening of September 14th, about 36 hours after Claudine's body was discovered, Erica Pena, 27, was walking San Bernardo when she saw a white Dodge Ram pickup headed her way. Pena knew the driver, who went by David. They had had several dates at his house together for months, and she liked him. That night, he was happy and talkative.
She got into his pickup, and he drove her to his home, explaining that his wife and children were out of town for the weekend. Once inside, they talked for a few minutes as she smoked a cigarette. At one point, Pena asked Ortiz if he knew anything about what had happened to her friend Melissa Ramirez. And I love that she wasn't afraid to inquire about this.
So he told her he was the next to last person to have sex with Melissa and that he was worried investigators would find his DNA. That's when he stopped smiling and began to act weird, she later said.
That's also weird that he said he was the next to last person. You know,
because if he was the last person.
Well, then it's totally him. But if he was the next to last.
Right. And how would he know that?
Hands clean. Exactly. Yeah. And I think men underestimate women, especially women who are not in traditional positions in society, i.e. sex work. And he might have underestimated her intelligence because of her occupation.
Right,
and that
right.
was his mistake. Yep. So she felt a sudden realization that Ortiz had murdered her friends, Melissa Ramirez and Claudine Luera. Overcome with sudden nausea, she burst out of the front door of the home and vomited in the driveway. Ortiz cleaned the mess with a garden hose.
Saying that she was sick and needed to go to the store, they got back into the pickup and Ortiz stopped at a gas station to buy her some food. When he returned to the truck, Pena brought up her friends again. In response, he reached into a side compartment of the driver's side door and pulled out a black pistol, aiming it directly at her. Woo, oh, what a response.
That escalated so quickly.
Quickly,
Wow.
Like, so, right in the parking lot. What the fuck is he thinking?
Right. And, you know, remember, he's struggling with PTSD. And I think that might have, and drinking heavily. So his, like, logic and impulse control, completely out the window.
Yeah.
I'm not an OG of true crime. That's totally speculation. But I think that might support why she asked a simple question and the answer was gun in the face.
Right.
So Pena threw open the passenger door and leaped out of the truck. David reached out and snatched at her shirt, ripping it off as she got away. A DPS trooper also happened to be parked at the station pumping gas. Wearing only a bra, Erica ran toward him, screaming that a man was trying to kill her. But by then, Ortiz had driven away.
Hi, I'm Matt Harris. Seton Tucker and I host the podcast Impact of Influence, which for 2 years covered in depth Alec Murdoch, who was eventually convicted in 2023 of murdering his wife Maggie and son Paul. That story continues to evolve, and we will cover that. Plus, we will tell you stories of other true crime events that have happened in the South. Please join us on Impact of Influence and give us a follow on the Impact of Influence Facebook page.
We are gathered here today to give you permission to plan the wedding that you want.
I'm Jessica Bishop.
And I'm Sari Wienerman.
And we're the hosts of the Bouquet Toss podcast.
Today's couples have to juggle so many things, from family expectations to outdated traditions and what's currently trending.
So to make it easier, we're going deep to figure out why we do weddings the way that we do, so you can decide what to keep and what to toss from your wedding day plans.
You are cordially invited to subscribe to the Bouquet Toss wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcast.com.
By the power vested in us, we pronounce you free to plan your day your way.
So whew, now yeah. It is time for the investigation and the arrest. What the what, Beth?
The trooper took Pena to the Webb County Sheriff's substation, where the Texas Rangers and Sheriff's detectives arrived to question her. She told them everything she knew and was able to show them where the man lived. The house belonged to a Border Patrol agent named Juan David Ortiz.
I'm not sure if that's how... That's typical of how to handle victims of sex crimes. Take them to the station. I don't know. And,
yeah, I don't,
and
I don't
question
know
her as if she was a criminal. I don't know. It's giving me bad vibes. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. But by the time a SWAT team broke into the house, it was empty. Although they did find an arsenal of guns. Assuming Ortiz would flee Laredo, they put a bolo, a be on the lookout on him. But Ortiz had not fled from Laredo. Instead, after he'd left the gas station, he drove to his house, loaded up on ammo, and then returned to San Bernardo.
There, he picked up 35-year-old Giselda Hernandez Cantu, a mother of four. People knew her as Shelly and has been described as quiet and seldom in trouble. Ortiz drove up Interstate 35 with Shelly for 20 minutes. Then he stopped at an overpass near a truck stop and demanded that she get out. He shot her twice in the neck, then cracked her over the head with what one investigator would later describe as a blunt object.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Overkill. And one source explained that it may have been because his first victim didn't die right away and struggled, and that he didn't want that to happen again. So overkill means, you know, you don't have to watch the person that you shot suffer.
Right.
I feel like I don't have any smart words coming out of my mouth, but I hope you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. But I don't know. It's just so weird that his first thought is to load up on ammo and go back and find a woman to kill.
Yeah, but if I wonder if the writing was on the wall for him at that point and he was just like, go big or go home, you know?
Yeah, but I still don't get it.
Hey. Look, you know, I don't either. I have a lot of empathy for a lot of things. This particular scenario,
this right here.
So he got back into his pickup and immediately drove back to San Bernardo, where he pulled up beside two women. One of them, 28-year-old Janelle Ortiz, no relation, by the way, because they have the same last name, who was a trans woman. When Ortiz asked if either of the women would like to be his date for the evening, Janelle stepped forward.
Although Janelle's family was supportive of her identifying as a transgender woman, saying her happiness was all that mattered. Across the country and around the world, transgender people, especially transgender women of color, face bias, discrimination, and violence. It's an epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Limited access to education, employment, health care, and social services can result in higher rates of poverty and homelessness. These dire circumstances can lead some to become involved in survival sex work.
Yes. Although on Facebook, Janelle used the name Nikki Enriquez. Enriquez is her mother's maiden name. Her family said she asked everyone to call her Janelle and most commonly went by Janelle Ortiz.
Janelle was the second oldest of five children. Her family described her as an incredibly caring person who had a lot of friends and was beloved by the local LGBTQ community. She lived in Laredo between family members' homes, hotels, and the streets.
So I just admire, like, this. It took a lot for her to survive.
Yeah.
And just her spirit of not giving up in spite of the circumstances.
Yeah.
Being trans, being a woman of color, not having resources, and still is, you know, full of joy and living as best as she can.
Yeah.
So I admire that of our fallen trans sister. So anyway, her sister Rose said she was worried about her constantly, especially when it rained and she didn't know where Janelle was. She believed Janelle was using drugs and wasn't always sure if she had a place to stay. She said she had a dream to give Janelle somewhere she could always go, where she could always be safe.
Ortiz drove with Janelle 15 miles up the interstate and pulled over. He ordered her to get out of the truck and walk behind a pile of nearby gravel. Like Claudine Luera and Erica Pena, Janelle had confronted Ortiz. Her family believes that she showed courage and defiance. Mm. They were told that her last words were, quote, if you're going to do it, then do it, unquote.
Oh, man.
Whew. Yeah.
So Ortiz shot her in the head. Janelle was survived by her parents, four siblings, and numerous loved ones. He had killed two women in less than 2 hours on the same day.
Yeah.
Wow. But he wasn't finished. He headed back towards San Bernardo, but he stopped along the way at a convenience store to use the bathroom, leaving his pistol in his truck.
A DPS trooper alerted by the bolo identified his truck and attempted to stop Ortiz as he exited the store. Another officer arrived and tried to bring down Ortiz with a taser, but missed. Ortiz sprinted south on San Bernardo and ducked into a hotel parking garage.
As a SWAT team closed in on the third floor of the parking garage, where Ortiz was hiding in the bed of a truck, he used his phone to post two messages on his own Facebook page. One, quote, "To my wife and kids, I love you," end quote. And the other, quote, "Doc Ortiz checks out. Farewell," end quote. He's not Shakespeare.
No. No, not at all. A friend who lived almost 1,800 miles away in Sacramento read Ortiz's posts and, afraid Ortiz was preparing to kill himself, immediately tried to call him. But Ortiz didn't answer. He stayed in the bed of the truck for nearly an hour, finally emerging at 2:34 a.m. with his hands raised. He was handcuffed and taken to the sheriff's substation, where he was read his rights.
Now, at first, Ortiz refused to talk to investigators. Then he requested a photo of his wife and kids. He said that he wanted to keep the picture while he was jailed to await trial. Ortiz explained that he deeply loved his family, and he wanted always to be able to look at their faces.
Ortiz was interrogated for almost 10 hours. Mm. At first, he denied everything. Finally, in a matter-of-fact voice, he acknowledged that he had done the killings. Speaking in both English and Spanish, Ortiz said that he had become frustrated with the Laredo Police Department's failure to remove, quote, "prostitutes," unquote, from San Bernardo, and he had decided to get rid of the women himself.
Who is he to decide?
Yeah.
Who gets to live or die?
Who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah. No, exactly. Like, and how are they less deserving to breathe the same air as the rest of us?
Mm-hmm.
Simply because they live differently than you, they look differently than you, or think differently than you.
And he hangs out with them all the time. So,
what the fuck?
Yeah.
Hypocrite fuck? Much?
Yes.
So I hope he burns in hell. He said that when he drove along San Bernardo Avenue, quote, "the monster came out," end quote, and urged him to, quote, "clean up," end quote, the avenue by getting rid of the prostitutes whom he called trash, dirty, and scum of the earth.
Ortiz even admitted that when he aimed his gun at Chelly Hernandez Cantu, she quietly begged him not to shoot, telling him, quote, "put your life in God's hands. God will take care of you," unquote. Mm. Ortiz, unmoved, stared at Chelly and pulled the trigger. More than 150 people attended Chelly's funeral.
Wow. It wasn't until Ortiz's confession that the investigators learned about a fourth victim, later identified as Janelle Ortiz. The information about Janelle was volunteered by Ortiz and, quote, "surprised us completely," unquote.
During his interrogation, Ortiz said that he suffered from PTSD from his deployment in Iraq and that he took prescription medication for depression and anxiety. He claimed that sometimes when he took his medications with alcohol, he would black out.
Okay.
Not an excuse.
So that same month, a skybox with security cameras was placed along San Bernardo. Security boxes were also put in place in the parking lots of several motels in the area. The Laredo Police Department said they placed them in specific areas to offer more security to avoid car thefts as well as other crimes. The police assured the community that this was not in reaction to a serial killer. I repeat, bullshit.
What serial killer? There's no serial killer.
Where's Natasha Lyonne in Poker Face when you need her? Because that is bullshit. But they, quote, "recognize that there is a problem with prostitution in the area," unquote. No, that's not the problem.
The problem, yeah.
I'll get into my takeaways. Let's get into the trial, shall we?
Okay. The trial was held in San Antonio and took 8 days. Prosecutors decided not to seek the death penalty after relatives of the victims said they preferred that Ortiz spend the rest of his life in prison. And my understanding is that one of the relatives had spent some time in prison and felt that it was a worse fate than death.
I really admire this desire of the family not to put this man to death. And also, I mean... I wonder if they would have had that thought if they themselves didn't have somebody in their midst who had experienced how awful prison was, yeah. right? And we talk about often on our show, like restorative justice, like no matter what happens to him, all these women will never be brought back, right? But what is appropriate? And I think they got it right. So
yeah.
defense attorneys painted Ortiz as an Iraq war veteran suffering from PTSD who was drinking and taking pills and had been coerced into a lengthy interview with police.
What?
But prosecutors depicted Ortiz as a killer agent, saying in a closing statement, quote, "It's terrifying to have the enemy within the ranks of law enforcement," unquote.
You think?
The call is coming from inside the house. And that's what I think about all cops. I could go on.
Oh, I know you could. Families of the victims attended trial dressed in t-shirts with the faces of the four murdered women on them, at times sobbing through crime scene photos or witness testimony of the killings.
I can't even imagine. That must have been really, really, really hard. One of the trial's most dramatic moments came when Erica Pena took the stand and recounted the story of how she escaped Ortiz. From the stand, she recounted how Ortiz pointed a gun at her face and, quote, "Some way, somehow, I took off running without a shirt. I'm crying hysterically," unquote.
And on December 7th, 2022, so just, you know, a couple months ago.
Not very long ago, yeah.
No, a jury unanimously found Ortiz guilty of capital murder. He was automatically sentenced to life in prison without parole. After the verdict, one by one, family members of the victims read emotional statements as Ortiz stood a few feet away. Ortiz kept his head down, and when the trial was concluded, he was escorted out of the courtroom by bailiffs.
Speaking of scum of the earth, bye, bitch. So now we're going to get into where are they now? Well, we'll tell you. After he was convicted and right before Christmas, Ortiz was sent to a state penitentiary located 5 hours away from Laredo and a couple of miles away from Brazoria County.
According to Webb County Sheriff Martin Queller, while imprisoned at Webb County Jail, Ortiz was constantly filing complaints with jail staff and with the Texas Commission on Jail Standards.
Get out of here.
He has said Ortiz's complaints were addressed but were found unsupported.
Thank you. Yeah. Oh, cry me a fucking river, you piece of basura.
Introduce you to Barry Clue, an authorised financial advisor from New Zealand and a very special kind of stain on humanity.
He was a very knowledgeable young guy.
He was a registered financial advisor.
Type of guy that was bending over backwards to help you.
Now, you could be forgiven for thinking that Barry sounds like a great guy, and you'd be right. Well, right up until the point when you're wrong.
It was all fictitious.
You stole from my son, who has a disability.
Chris never knew. He died believing that we're all taken care of.
A psychopath is somebody who lacks empathy, acts impulsively. I think there's a strong case that Barry might be all of those things, actually.
To find out how Barry Clue stole over $15 million from 81 victims, subscribe to Clueless, The Long Con. That's Clueless, spelt K-L-O-O-G-H-L-E-S-S.
So now we're going to get into our takeaways and what we think made Ortiz snap. What are your thoughts on this case, Beth?
Well, when I first started researching this story, I struggled with why the fuck this happened, because it's so weird.
Puzzling. Yeah. He seemed like a nice guy. But
yeah. People who knew him liked him and couldn't imagine that he'd committed these crimes.
Right.
But my aha moment was when he said that he was frustrated with the Laredo Police Department's failure to remove the prostitutes from San Bernardo. Mm-hmm. I think it's far more likely that he was frustrated with himself for being unable to stay away from the sex workers.
Wow. So he punished them for his failure.
I think somewhere in his mind, he thought if he killed them all, then he would be able to stay away or something like that.
Yeah. Well, how is that different from, maybe this is a stretch, but Roe v. Wade punishing women for just having vaginas.
Exactly. Yeah,
and, you know.
Or, school and work dress codes where they punish women and girls for what they wear instead
wearing
of telling men to,
when it's hot.
Keep it to themselves.
Control yourself. It's a nice summer day. I'm wearing this sundress, you son of a bitch.
So it's clear that his family was important to him, yet he started to frequent the San Bernardo blocks. Why? I don't know. It's obvious that something was going wrong in his life and he was struggling. Mm-hmm. I didn't read anything about things going wrong with his wife and family, but it could have been. I don't know. Okay. But there were frequent references to PTSD and his behavior that year as he was turning towards alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I think going to San Bernardo was some sort of refuge for him.
Sure.
But being religious and a family man, I think he was disgusted with himself. And when he called the women trash, dirty, and scum of the earth, I think that's actually what he thought of himself, and he wanted to rid himself of it.
Right. Kill that thing inside of him.
Exactly. Yes. And now this is just pure speculation on my part. It's not 100%, but it does sound like Melissa Ramirez was the woman Ortiz was calling his girlfriend and whose photo he showed to his friend. Mm-hmm. I think it's possible that the first murder of Melissa occurred maybe because she threatened to tell his wife or made some kind of a demand on him, or maybe he just got sick of himself for having a dual life with a wife and a girlfriend.
Yeah.
But then once he murdered her, the genie was out of the bottle, and then, you know, he just couldn't stop.
Couldn't stop himself. I mean, this spree was 12 days. In 12 days, he became a serial killer. I can't think of any goal I could complete from start to finish in 12 days, let alone become a serial killer. So it's just the speed at which this all unfolded is wild. And I think his mental health definitely contributed to his actions. Now, it don't matter what these victims' backgrounds were or what their profession was. They did not deserve to have their lives taken. And to your point, Beth, about the toxicity of his attitude, it's giving male toxicity towards women supporting themselves in a manner that he didn't approve of.
Right.
And anyway, I just think it's disgusting. And then I was thinking about the children in the story in general, or in this case in general, because Ortiz had children too, right?
Right.
Who lost their father because of what he did. And the victims, the women who all had lots of children. And I just wonder, you know, how they're holding up and grappling with the fact that their moms will never come home.
Right.
Because some of the sources I listened to and watched talked about how young some of their kids were.
Yeah.
And
little kids. Yeah.
Little kids. And so my heart goes out to them. And it's interesting how addiction affected Juan David Ortiz's life in a negative way, and his pursuit of help was minimal. And that may have been because of his ego, because he was a man, because he was in law enforcement, powerful, blah, 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 eat a dick. But the women who were struggling with addiction were like, had a desire to be better, right? They were trying to be better. And they, you know, it's just really unfortunate that they didn't get the opportunity to keep trying.
And he had all the advantages.
The resources. Yeah. I mean, government health insurance? Hello?
Right.
And the VA? Oh my God.
And these women were struggling.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just seems really unfair. And I'm like welling up because it's so fucked up. Everyone kept saying that this man was a wolf in sheep's clothing. Every single fucking case or every article and every video was like a wolf in sheep's clothing. Huh? These wolves are described as sheep and they patrol our streets and our borders. So how about a wolf in wolf's clothing. That's what I think of police. Don't get me started again.
Don't get her started.
So also these women, they were from vulnerable populations vulnerable to sexual violence. And this is particularly an issue that affects sex workers, especially women of color, undocumented folks, and trans sex workers. And they are often reluctant to go to the police, and it perpetuates this violence. Because please do not believe that Juan David Ortiz is the only man in law enforcement who is doing this awful shit.
Right, right.
And it perpetuates the cycle of violence because there's no ramifications, there's no consequences, and it just continues on. And I hate it. You're not going to believe
this. I'm shocked.
One source said that he would shoot the victims while they were performing fellatio on him, which I think is extremely brutal and cowardly and violent. And I just, if I haven't said it before, I'll say it again. American culture is violent. So I just wanted to comment on the brutality of his crimes.
I didn't read anything that where they said that.
Well, I listened to a podcast which I cited in the show notes. I heard it a couple times. So that's why I'm bringing it up. But either way, whether they were performing whatever on him or not, I think the brutality of the crimes is something that's pretty horrific. And then he not only shot them, but then dumped them. Like they were garbage, it's horrible. What else was I said? A career in law enforcement comes with a power trip that seems to attract a certain kind of individual who really is hungry for power and brutality. And I just think that the culture is a problem, and all of these vulnerable populations who were victims in this case will continue to be if, you know, the culture of public safety, the people who are in charge of it, doesn't change. So
yeah, it needs to change.
Yes, or go away. Well, now it's time to talk about how not to get murdered. If you love true crime and you don't want to die, here's a tip for you.
This segment is not intended to be victim blaming. We thought of this segment because I read somewhere that a lot of people listen to true crime because they want to know what they can do to be safer. This is not meant to blame the victims. It's just learning from other people's experiences.
Well, 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 if it isn't a how not to get murdered tip, look at you. A couple of things. These are throwbacks. Just
general.
General tips. So if possible, wear comfortable clothing when you're walking alone. High heels and tight skirts are hard to run and fight in, and scarves and long necklaces are easy to grab and strangle you with. So avoid those if you're alone and you can. Or think through how you would fight in the clothes that you have on. Would you kick off your high heels or hike your skirt up around your hips or run or kick roundhouse? Or if you walk a lot, regularly change your walking routine. Be alert to who and what is around you. Don't talk on your phone. Keep your hands free by limiting the number of things you are carrying. Maybe use a backpack or a fanny pack. And serial killers and other criminals often play on the sympathies of unsuspecting people to lure them into dangerous situations. Remember I told you about the dude who he was a confessed rapist and he would intentionally bump into women at the supermarket.
Oh, right.
And whoever apologized, that was
that
who
was
in his mind was gonna get. So if someone asks for the time, directions, or help in or around their car, you can be courteous, but don't get close and keep it moving. You can always help by offering to make a phone call or notify someone else. or mind your business. If you find yourself in a situation where someone has a gun on you, experts say that a shooter will only hit a running target 4 out of every 100 shots. And even then, it most likely will not be a vital organ. So run if you can. If you can do anything about it, do not let your attacker take you to a different place. You do not want to get to crime scene number 2. So do whatever it takes and never give up. Hit the attacker where it counts. The eyes, if it breathes or breeding, that's where you remember those, breeding or breathing. So the eyes, the knees, the throat, the groin are very vulnerable and good places to gouge and kick. But listen to your instincts and try to determine if a counterattack by you is the best approach. It may not be, but if you do decide to fight, make sure your first move is as forceful as possible so you can get away. And look, these are not foolproof.
No, they're just a few tips.
It's just a few tips. And it's good things to think about all the time because the world is fucking nuts. Yeah. Anyway, now it's shout out time where we shout out any content by or about people of color or any LGBTQ folks or anybody othered or any true crime goodies. So boy, oh boy, I've got quite a few. I'm sorry. How long are we going?
No, we're good.
Okay, so let me start with, let's see, the Pretend Podcast. I told you about this before. It's a podcast. It's an iHeart podcast, a true crime podcast. But this specific season is about stalking. And these two people approached the host, Javier, and were like, we're being stalked and we want to put our story out there. He was skeptical, like, are you sure? You know, like, what if you make the stalker mad? And they're like, yeah, we got to tell our story so that this doesn't happen to anybody else. And it's 12 episodes. They're all out on Patreon. I don't have his Patreon, but there's 5 episodes out in the free feed right now. However, the two people who came to him because they wanted to be on a podcast to allegedly help other potential stalking victims have been indicted on federal charges.
Oh my God.
So go check out the Pretend Podcast.
Okay,
the whole time he's like, you know, I'm a little suspicious, but I'm doing my best to be objective. He interviews the police. He interviews people in their family, their friends. They hired their own private investigator. He interviews that person. And most of the people say, I believe them. I believe they were victims.
Right.
But the feds think something else. Remember the 1619 project that was created by Nicole Hannah Jones? She's an acclaimed, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning New York Times journalist. She created this project marking it 1619 because that was the year that the first Black person was taken from Africa and brought to the shores here on the United States. And at first it was a series in the New York Times Magazine.
Right.
Then it was a podcast. We shouted that out. And now it's a 6-part series on Hulu, and it is chef's kiss. Cool. It is so, it's like a celebration. Like the most recent episode that came out this last week was about Black music from 1619 to now, and just how Black people put flavor on everything, including the music. And I love it. It was just a celebration.
That's awesome.
So get that on Hulu. And then Body Bags Podcast. Have you ever heard of this?
That sounds familiar. But go ahead.
Okay. So I'm minding my beeswax at work, and somebody comes up to me and sees my water bottle that is covered in True Crime Podcast stickers, y'all. And they're like, they don't know I'm Wendy. They just think I'm a podcast, True Crime podcast fan. So they recommended this Body Bags Podcast to me, and I love it. Apparently, this host is also a college professor, and this person at work took their forensic class. Wow. So it's hosted by Joseph Scott Morgan, and apparently he's one of the country's leading experts on applied forensics.
Oh, wow.
And he's on a show that we won't name. It rhymes with Clancy Space, and he's a frequent contributor on that show. What he does is he leads listeners through blood-soaked death scenes of America. Then he goes into the autopsy room to fully understand the science behind each case. And when I say I'm right salivating, just thinking about it, wow.
Right down your alley.
Woo! Yes. So what do you got?
I don't have any great shout-outs this week. Sorry.
Don't you dare say that. I see what you have here, and I am riveted.
I've been busy, and I haven't really wanted to get into anything too heavy.
Understood.
So I started watching Ginny and Georgia on Netflix.
Tell me more about this.
It's kind of like a more realistic version of Gilmore Girls.
Ah, so they're not gazillionaires who live in a hotel?
No, no. Ginny is the daughter and Georgia is the mom, and Ginny is biracial. Mm. And they move to this rich, very white town. Mm-hmm. So it's like they live on another planet.
Okay.
And the mom is kind of a scammer. So you get a lot of her backstory, which is like she had a pretty terrible backstory. So far I'm enjoying it. It's not too heavy.
What's it on?
It's on Netflix.
Okay, got you.
And then also on Netflix, and this is not content by or about people of color or a true crime goodie.
Okay, I'm listening.
It's funny. Okay. And I love history.
Yeah.
And as you know.
Yes, of course.
And this is a mockumentary about history. So it's supposed to be a history documentary, but it's a mockumentary.
Okay.
It's called Kunk on Earth.
Huh?
And it's a very Daily Show-ish, you know, when they would have someone interview an expert and all the questions are really dumb.
Yeah.
You remember that bit?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. I love it. Is it conch, so, like conch? The conch shell?
C-U-N-K. And that's, so it's a character. I think Philomena Kunk is the character. It's not the actress's real name.
Okay.
But I guess apparently it's a English, well, she's English.
Okay.
And I guess this is one of a series of shows that she's done, and they're all kind of like this.
Oh, I love it. You know, the Brits, sometimes they just do TV better than us. Sorry.
Yeah,
sorry.
A lot of the times they do, yeah.
So
I thought it was really funny. Yeah.
Okay, well, I am on it, adding it to my queue. So that is Pretend Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. The 1619 Project on Hulu. Body Bags Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Ginny and Georgia on Netflix. And Kunk on Earth on Netflix. Oh my God.
We're here. It's time.
My heart skipped a beat. No. Oh my God. Well, I guess that's the end of the show.
Yeah.
Beth, in the meantime, I'm going to miss you so much.
Me too.
I'm going to miss this microphone so much. But in the meantime, where can the people find us?
Our website is fruitloopspod.com, and we use Fruit Loops Pod for all of our social media. The footnotes for each episode can be found on our website. Plus, check it out for the different ways that you can support the show and become a Fruit Loops patron.
Yay!
You can also support us by supporting our sponsors or by giving us a 5-star review.
Yeah. So this is a weekly podcast, and new episodes drop every Thursday. So until next time, look alive, y'all. It's crazy out there. We'll be right back.
truth about the Haditha massacre has been covered up, but not anymore.
I know you know what happened.
They went into houses and killed women and children.
What are you thinking?
What a mess.
U.S. Marines murdered innocent civilians in cold blood.
And at the center of it all
is 25-year-old Sergeant Frank Wooderich.
And me. Murder in House 2. A new podcast from Crowd Network.
I want to take a moment to tell you about my podcast, Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage. In 1984, a woman named Phyllis Cottle was abducted in broad daylight, tortured, and left to die in a burning car in Akron, Ohio. At the time, I was a rookie reporter covering this horrific story. Since then, I've reported every kind of crime imaginable. I've been able to leave most of them at work, but not this one. The one that buried itself under my skin and stayed put. Phyllis Cottle was a badass woman, and I want to tell you her story. A production of Evergreen Podcasts and signature title of the Killer Podcast Network, you can find Carol Costello Presents Blind Rage wherever you get your podcasts. Discover more great true crime and paranormal programming at killerpodcast.com.